Hello and welcome to this episode of Let's Talk About by Kangaroo Minds. I'm Verika and today we have with us Dr. Sheba Singh. Dr. Singh is a psychologist and the founder of Talkspace, a mental health studio located in Mumbai. Having a PhD in psychology with over 20 years of experience in both practicing and teaching in this space, she currently specializes in the treatment of anxiety, depression, and OCD, along with working with parents, children, and couples. She has authored several research papers, spoken at several seminars, as well as received several awards, including being recognized as one of the most prominent leaders in mental health by the World Mental Health Congress. Our conversation with Dr. Singh today is going to center around understanding therapy. However, before we begin, we would like to put out a trigger warning for our audiences. If at any point during this conversation, should you find yourself feeling triggered or distressed, we urge you to take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. And now, without taking much time, let's hear more from Dr. Singh. Dr. Singh, welcome to this conversation. It's really lovely to have you with us this evening.
Thank you so much, Vedika, for having me here. I'm glad.
Now, I know, therapy is something that, you've been practicing for a very long time. And, now as we move into more conversations about therapy, I think, while it's somewhat becoming more normalized, I think a lot of people don't understand, what is therapy, how therapy works. So I'm really hoping that, our conversation today sort of helps people understand all those building blocks towards therapy. So I'm going to start off with quite a basic question, but, how would you define therapy and who do you think can benefit from going to therapy?
Yeah, good question to start with. So therapy, it is a way of treatment. Like when you are hurt on your leg or you have a fracture, you go to a doctor, you take medicine. That's again a way of treatment. Medicine is a way of treatment. So likewise, therapy is also a way of treatment to treat mental health illnesses.
Right.
So, and people who have overwhelming feelings, like they become anxious very quickly or they're not able to deal with their sadness or things like that. Okay, whenever it comes to your mind and your thoughts, you always have to go to a therapist, a psychotherapist, for that matter. That's a way of treatment. So you treat yourself and feel better for it.
Right. So it's interesting, that you spoke about therapy as a way of treating mental illnesses more specifically. But, a lot of times we see that, people tend to use the terms around mental health professionals and different kind of, options in terms of treatment options interchangeably. And, one of that is around therapy and counseling. So can you tell us, how can someone decide whether they need therapy or do they need counseling?
Definitely. Again, a very good question and very less questioned and very less answered. See, counseling, when we talk about counseling, it takes care of your milder situations. For example, your adjustment difficulties, or if you're not able to adjust or deal with situations at work or at home or in a relationship. So those are milder difficulties and more specific ones.
Right.
So when they are very specific, people come for one problem. Say I'm not able to adjust or I'm not able to deal with the day in my office. That's a very specific situation. And where counseling would help.
Right.
And that would be a very short-term kind of a treatment. And for therapy, it deals with more complex difficulties. For example, you have, say, even if you have mild anxiety, that is a clinical difficulty. Even if you have mild depression or complex depression, these are clinical difficulties where therapy would be needed. And then we have these complex difficulties, obviously, we need some kind of psychological testing also, which a clinician who can do therapy would help over there.
Right.
So that's a That's a small difference which people don't understand usually, but then this is the difference. And say, if we say it in simpler words, it would be for milder difficulties we go to a counselor, and for more difficult problems we go to a therapist.
Right. No, that's one very interesting way to, look at it. But, when we talk about milder difficulties and more complex difficulties, a lot of people don't really know, at where they are on that sort of a spectrum. So what would be, some signs that you would suggest that people can look out for, which would suggest that, yes, they need to see a therapist?
So first of all, I always say that there is a connection between body and mind, which is true,
Right.
But whenever we have negative thoughts going on in our mind, body shows it, that's the first sign. And usually the first sign is changes in your sleep and appetite. So whenever you have difficulties in sleeping, suppose you don't get sleep. So there are three difficulties in sleep. You don't get sleep, you have a disturbed sleep, or you sleep a little more. So these are three difficulties in sleep. You find any of this happening to you for more than a week, and if after a week you are able to settle down with your sleep, then it's fine. But if it gets over 2 weeks, then you definitely have to see a therapist.
Right.
And same goes with appetite. Either you start eating less or you start eating more. So, or there is a disturbed appetite. So sometimes you're eating, sometimes you're not eating, you don't feel like, or sometimes you're binge eating.
Right.
So that is the time when you have to see somebody. Also, when somebody becomes dysfunctional, they're not able to deal with their daily routine. They're not able to deal with their normal problems, which were okay with them earlier, but now they're not able to cope with that. That is the time when you need to see somebody from, say, mental health sector.
Right. No, I think, that's really interesting, for especially for the audiences to sort of understand what are some of the warning signs that they can look out for, or, some signs of something not being okay, which kind of tells them that this is a good time to seek therapy. But just moving forward, just taking the same conversation forward, how does someone go about finding a therapist?
Yes. So nowadays I see so many people, say, practicing psychology without any knowledge of psychology. Or sometimes, interestingly, I've seen some people who have done their bachelor's in some other field, and they have one paper of psychology, and they start practicing psychology. So which is not right. So you're not doing justice with people. So it's just like saving other people's lives or putting other people's lives in danger. So I think we should look into it, and people should be aware of where to go and how to find a therapist, and what should they look into for him to have a good therapist.
Right.
So first of all, I would say just look at the qualification. So the qualifications are, at least the therapist has to be a master's in psychology. A master's in psychology, a master's in clinical psychology, or a master's in counseling psychology. So that is the basic qualification of a therapist.
Right.
Then you may also look for how experienced is the psychologist, whether he or she will be able to handle your difficulties. So that is, again, a secondary part. The first thing is the qualification. So not that the pressures or a 2 year experience or a 4 year experience that cannot handle, but then if you are going in for a specific difficulty and you are finding trying to find a person who can deal with your specific difficulty, then it's good to have to see what kind of an experience that person has, and also look for some reviews. So normally for mental health professionals, people don't give any reviews. That's again a challenge. But then if you can find, that would be very nice.
Yeah.
So these are some things which we can see when we are finding a psychologist or a therapist.
So I think, you know, you touched upon some interesting ideas over there. And, you know, one thing I want to ask you about, which, you know, you see a lot of young people doing sometimes these days is sort of, you know, gathering information from social media. So, you know, like how social media is a huge part of our lives right now. And so is, you know, this need to create content. So what would be your thoughts around, you know, someone looking for a therapist from social media, or, you know, going by how many likes you have or how many followers you have, like, you know, using those kind of criteria to find a therapist?
Yeah. So, Vedika, I would not say that is wrong to put it on social media about, like we are discussing about red flags.
Right.
So if you put red flags on social media for people to understand whether this is time to go to a therapist, that's a good thing, as in it is kind of spreading awareness about the difficulty. The problem comes where we deal with problems of, say, giving therapy on social media, or giving solutions or giving advices on social media, which would not be relevant for everybody. So the situation which is, or the coping mechanism which is good for me may not be good for you, or the situation which is okay for me may not be okay for you. You know, so this is very subjective when we are dealing with human life. You know, people have different thought processes, people take it in a different way. So covering therapy sessions or covering suggestions or advices on social media is not a advisable point. So we should refrain from all. So I think all mental health professionals would not do that. But then you were talking about youngsters putting all these things on social media. So take care of that when we're reading those.
Because, you know, as we said, that, you know, a lot of times because the younger generation uses, like, you know, the amount of social media they tend to consume, they do tend to sometimes base judgments on, you know, how good a therapist is based on, oh, you know, this person is popular on social media. And I think that, as you said, can be risky because the nature of content and the fact that therapy is a very personalized, a very tailor-made process, and it's not always that you'll find the best fit, you know, through social media. But, you know, in your experience, you know, just to take this conversation forward, what are some barriers that people face when it comes to seeking therapy?
The first barrier and the most important barrier is stigma. People don't enter a mental health clinic till the time they are suffering too much and they're not able to cope with it. You know, so if they have smaller difficulties, they would not land up in a mental health clinic. And what if somebody sees me here? What if I bump into someone here, walking here only? So that is the stigma. And I want people to know that not, like we discussed about counseling and therapy, you know. So not everybody who has a mental health disorder or who's going crazy would end up in a mental health clinic. So even if you have smaller difficulties and you want to solve them or take support from a mental health professional, that's okay. You know?
Correct.
So we have to remove the stigma. That's a major, major barrier in seeking help.
Right.
And also some people think that finances is a barrier. Because, you know, why finances? We don't think before going to a doctor about finances. Why do we think about finances when we are going to a mental health professional? So I agree that it's a long process. Sometimes it takes 2 months, 3 months. but then we have to treat it. And people usually think that this is a phase and this will go away on its own. But it is not a phase. It needs treatment. And without treatment, it will not go away. The thing is, another barrier, I think, when they go to a professional and they don't have a good experience, they refrain from going to another one, you know. And I would like to say here that it's a matter of rapport sometimes, you know.
Right.
You have that same wavelength with your therapist, and you get along well with that person. But then it is not possible with all the therapists or with all the patients, you know. So if you have a bad experience with one person, bad experience when I say, not a very cordial experience, so doesn't matter, it's okay. So you can have another person and you may have the same wavelength with that person. So you may try another one, but then don't go away from therapy. So seek help. That's the most important thing.
No, I think that's really important, you know, that you mentioned that, you know, it's not that you're going to find the right therapist in your first attempt, but that shouldn't deter people from seeking help. Like, you know, look for someone else. You will find somebody, and I think it's important to, you know, just keep that at the back of your mind that it's not that every therapist, and you will be able to build that rapport, as you said, or build that connection, and that's okay.
Yeah. And that also doesn't mean that the therapist is not good or he doesn't have any skills. So it may be a matter of that you could not connect with her or him. You know, that's the only thing.
So, you know, you spoke about stigma, and I'm glad you spoke about stigma because I was going to ask you about, you know, how much do you feel that there is a lot of myths and a lot of misinformation around therapy? And I think that somewhere contributes to the stigma and how little we really understand about it. You know, as you said, we're willing to go to a doctor, but we're a little hesitant to seek help for our mental health. It's almost like, you know, sometimes we forget that the brain is equally a part of our body and our entire functioning. So, you know, are there
and
any
a very
myths?
important part.
Exactly. So are there any myths around therapy that, you know, you'd like to call out? And how do you think we can sort of counter those myths which exist?
Yeah, definitely. There's so many, actually. So the most important one, I would say, people always think that only weak people go to seek help. You know, so many people comment, okay, are you weak? Why do you need to go to a therapist? Why do you need to go to a psychiatrist? Are you weak? See, I run my own mental health studio, and I have this tagline which says, seeking help is a sign of strength. You know, it's so difficult to talk about your difficulties to a stranger. You know? And the moment you enter the studio, that's your strength. You know, that you're committed to talk about your difficulty and get out of it. You know? I think that's a sign of strength and not weakness. That's the number one myth that people say, that only weak people go to a mental health professional. You know, another is, like I earlier said, that people think that it's just a phase and it will go away on its own. So usually when parents of teenagers come to me, they say that this is that teenager thing and it will go away. You know, I don't think so. As a professional, it is not a teenager thing. We have to deal with it. You know, if we don't deal with this situation right now, it may lead to something else.
Right.
So we have to curb it right now. Even if it's a child, 13-year-old or a 9-year-old or a 18-year-old, you know, you have to deal with it. You have to treat it. So it's just not a phase. It is a difficulty you need to talk about and solve it. Sometimes there are adjustment difficulties between parents and children.
Right.
And then they say that, okay, this is a generational gap and it's okay. It is a generational gap, definitely, but we can solve it. We can have a more cordial relationship with our children. Children can have more cordial relationship with their parents. You know? So that is true. And then I also think that mental health conditions, people think, cannot be treated, can never be treated. So once you have a label, it will remain with you always. That's not the situation. That's not the condition at all. So you get it treated, you get fever. Do people say that you will have fever forever? It gets treated and you're fine. You know? And same goes with the mental health condition. So you get this treated and you feel better. So why suffer when there is treatment available? And people keep on suffering because they think that this, we cannot get out of this. I think this will remain with me forever.
Right. No, I think, you know, I will come to some of the ideas that you've just discussed, but one of the other misconceptions I wanted to ask you, and I'm sure you know, face it a lot in your practice, that people think that, you know, therapy is just about going in there, talking to someone, and someone's going to listen. And can you, for that reason, can you tell our audiences a little bit about how therapy actually works? That it's not just a, you know, talking cure, that, you know, they're just going to walk into a room, you're sitting there, and they're going to come and talk to you, and you're just going to listen and charge them at the end of, you know, that 40 minutes, 50 minutes of just listening.
Yeah. So I'll tell you something, Vedika, over here. So I'm not talking about journey people or my patients who come to me and say that, you know. I train some students also, some psychology students in my clinic. And sometimes they observe our session, you know. So this is one of the interns. He told me that when you talk to patients, it looks like a simple conversation, you know. But I train them in cognitive behavioral therapy. So when I started training them, she told me that we thought you are just conversing with the patient. Now when you are training us in the therapy, we understand that your talk is so structured. You know, the one question you ask is so structured and you know what to ask next. So it is not a very, very structured or rigidly structured therapy, but it is a kind of semi-structured. So we take out another question from the answer. So it's kind of semi-structured kind of questions in therapy. But we do a lot of hard work in planning the therapy sessions. We conceptualize the case first. The first time the patient comes, we conceptualize the case on the basis of the history we get. And the later sessions are planned. Before we take a session, there's a lot of planning before that. There's a lot of homework we do before taking a session. So after having so much of experience also, still I prepare my session before the patient comes in. So that's the kind of therapy we do. And it's not a normal conversation. It's a structured conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of approaches have also developed now to therapy, you know, whether it's trauma-informed therapy, grief-informed therapy, you've got queer affirmative processes. So a lot of times, you know, for someone who's new to this space of therapy or looking for a therapist, they may not really understand what all these jargon means. So can you just give a little bit of insight around these approaches?
Sure, Vedika. So I'm glad that these therapists are available because, you know, all of them are qualified, trained psychologists. So they have the basic qualification of master's in psychology or clinical psychology or counseling psychology. But they are further trained in, suppose, trauma. So they know trauma much deeper than people who have kind of generalized therapy approaches. You know? So trauma, they know more about trauma, they know how what are the implications, they know what are the impacts of trauma and how to deal with trauma. Same goes with LGBTQ. The people who are trained in LGBTQ affirmative therapy, they know a lot more than general therapy. So not that the other therapists cannot deal with it, but then if you go to LGBTQ affirmative therapist, definitely he would know a lot better because he's been trained further into it.
So, just around therapy, we spoke about how you mentioned that it's a very structured conversation. A lot of work basically goes into planning a therapy session. But what are some things around seeking therapy and when you come into a therapy session that people should be aware of? So, for instance, things around confidentiality and consent, ethics, like the whole safeguarding, those kind of issues, because I know we use these terms a lot in our conversation and our jargon, but the common person doesn't always know what to expect. And what are sort of these ground principles around therapy?
Definitely. So I think people don't know their rights. So when they enter therapy, they don't know what to expect out of therapy. So when I take my case history session, the first session I take with my patient, I always ask his expectations from the therapy. So and I also give some more information to the patient. As you know, the sessions would be confidential and we would not talk about these even in the clinic, forget about talking about it outside the clinic with other people. So these are fully 100% confidential sessions. Also, I tell patients that they can back out from therapy anytime when they don't feel comfortable or when they think that they don't need it anymore. They can definitely anytime back out. Or if they find any difficulties during therapy or if they are not able to do. So this is not a class. That I am giving a homework and you are not able to do it and then you back up. It's not like that. So if you're not able to do that, the therapist will understand why, what is the hitch, what's the difficulty, what's the hindrance. And therapist will try to deal with what is the obstacle coming in. Okay. So therapy is not, so the patient has to understand that therapy is not a class and he doesn't have to be scared of anything, So whatever he's comfortable with, he can share. And whenever he's comfortable, he can share. He wants to share more whenever he's comfortable next time, or he's not comfortable, that's okay, But then for a therapist, if he or she gets maximum information, it would be nice. It would be nice to plan the therapy likewise. So nothing to be scared of. The initial session only, we discuss about all these things. We discuss, suppose a child comes, so the child is always scared that the therapist will tell everything to my parents. So I take a session with both the parents and the child and tell the child that if I feel that there is something which I need to share with your parents, I would do it. But I'll ask you before sharing this with them. And I tell the parents that, okay, I will keep you in loop. So that parents don't feel that, that the child is speaking to a stranger about we don't know what. So I always keep the parents in the loop. And that is also in the knowledge of the child. So these are some of the rights of children, parents, or clients. So they should know everything about this.
No, I think, that's interesting because a lot of people don't know what to expect. And I think, like you kind of lay it out for them around what to expect, how the whole safeguarding works, especially around children and confidentiality, consent, just the whole ethical process of therapy. So, for anybody who's sort of watching this, and if you feel that you have doubts, you can ask your therapist. Like, I feel, that equation between an individual and their therapist needs to be such that, you can go up to them and ask them that, okay, like, how does your confidentiality policy work, or, how does the ethics of this work? But,
Yeah.
we've seen Bollywood movies show us therapy sessions. And they give you a very different picture of how therapy and, therapeutic practices work, the way therapeutic principles work. So even if it's around, things like transference and counter transference. So do you want to, just for our audiences, talk, like, sort of bust that Bollywood myth or the cinema myth around therapy and tell them, how therapy is or is not like what you see on cinema?
See, on the contrary, Vedika, I appreciate the kind of importance therapy is getting through cinema. They are appreciating therapy. They are inculcating it in their team. So I appreciate that definitely. But I think sometimes because these are commercial movies, so they glamorize therapy. So while glamorizing, they change how therapy looks like. I've watched some movies where the therapist takes the client on a beach. So usually we don't do that. This is glamorizing therapy. So we don't take our clients outside the office, the therapy room. You have to sit in the therapy room only and talk about your difficulties. And usually our therapy rooms are soundproof. So nobody outside can also listen to what we are saying. Forget about going out and talking about it. So these are some of the things I think Bollywood people also should think. And should keep therapy as it is, as it has to be.
So we briefly, I know earlier you mentioned about red flags and harm in therapy or bad therapy is something we don't talk about enough, and very rarely do we even acknowledge that. So, could you throw some light around, that aspect and all the risks that bad therapy per se poses?
Yes, I'll talk about both clinicians and patients. When we say bad therapy, it is from clinician side and from the patient side both. Right. So when we talk about clinicians, say the therapist. So I'm interchangeably using the two words, the therapist and clinician. So sometimes the therapists don't use the techniques which are appropriate. So that is the harm which a patient may feel, or patient may not feel better after the therapy. So that might be because the therapist is not trained in that particular thing, or he's not using the techniques which are more appropriate to that particular difficulty, or sometimes very, very major difficulty is when the therapist is not able to convey what he wants to convey. So that is a lack in communication skills. So that is a lack in the way the clinician is trying to tell the patient what to do or to understand the patient in a better way. So when he conveys something, the patient doesn't perceive it in the same manner. And then there is a lag, and that's the harm in therapy. So rather than helping the patient, the clinician ends up disturbing the patient more. And it's very rare. It's not the usual thing. So all the clinician therapists are very trained, and they hardly do something like that, But then we are just looking at the probability. So what can go wrong in therapy? And sometimes, now from the patient side, patients become overly dependent on the clinician. So people would come with small difficulties that now, okay, this is my situation, what do I do? Okay. Now the counselor or the therapist, they are not there to tell you what do you do. No. They can listen, they can give you general techniques, they can give you insights about what's happening. Okay. They'll help you in all those things. But you come with small things and you become so much dependent on the therapist. Now, therapy is to make you self-sufficient and not dependent on anybody. So you need to learn the techniques to become self-sufficient. That is therapy. So that's the harm which therapy may create, but it's a very rare situation.
No, I think that
Yeah.
just the whole aspect that therapy is supposed to make you self reliant and self sufficient is something I think a lot of times people don't realize. That's why they feel that therapy is just like this endless process that once you start you're just going to be there all your life
Yeah.
essentially, but that's not always the case. But
Exactly, yes.
besides that, you touched upon this that people tend to drop out of therapy as well. And that could happen for a whole range of reasons. What are some of the reasons you've seen that people tend to, drop out from therapy?
So like we earlier discussed, finances is a problem sometimes.
Right.
Now again, very interesting thing is, so now when we take antibiotics, that's a course of 5 days, but after 2 days we start feeling better and we stop our antibiotics. But we have not completed the course. Same goes with therapy. So if the therapy is for 8 sessions, or it usually takes 8 sessions at least. So people start feeling better after 3, 4 sessions. And then they say, okay, I'm fine, I'm good. And they back out. They drop therapy. That's a usual thing. Usual, very usual thing. Finances also can be managed. Not much of a difficulty. But usually this is the case that people back out, and people sometimes, like we earlier discussed about, patient doesn't have a rapport with the patient, and thinks that this is the end of therapy and therapy cannot help me at all. And that's not the case. So you cannot get the right therapist in the first go. You may try another one.
I
These are important things.
think it's very, very interesting that, we've alluded to the whole mental health, physical health parity. Which a lot of times, they tell you that, you should treat mental health the way we treat physical health. And we spoke about the flu and sort of, this whole notion of antibiotics. So I'm just going to draw something like a parallel to that. For instance, if you have fever or if you have COVID or if you have a migraine, once you start taking medication, you see a doctor, most people see signs that they're getting better. Key fever has subsided, yeah, COVID symptoms have subsided, yeah, that migraine peak phase is over. But when it comes to therapy, often people don't know how to measure progress. Like, how do I know that this is getting better? And I think that, I don't know if that's also something that, contributes to people dropping out, is just not being able to measure progress. Or whether, that also adds to that stigma and reluctance that we were talking about earlier in terms of payment. I don't know when I'm going to feel better. Like, if I break my arm, I know key, 6 weeks and this will recover or whatever. You have timelines that, doctors tend to give you. So with therapy, for people who are in therapy or going to seek therapy, how would you sort of tell them, how can they measure progress per se, or that, just see that things are getting better?
Very good question, Devika, and very important one also. So usually, see, I'm trained in cognitive behavioral therapy. So there are many different types of therapy. Some therapies may take longer, some therapies are quick therapy. So in cognitive behavioral therapy, for simple difficulties like anxiety, simple anxiety and simple depression, we take around 8 to 14 sessions, which are weekly sessions.
Right.
So once a week session, right? If there are complex depression or complex anxieties, we take a little longer, right? And after we see some relief, we distance our therapy sessions, you know. So once, say, 8 sessions are definitely weekly. After that, we distance them to, say, 15 days and then 1 month or 3 months. And then there are follow-ups after every 3 months. You know? So that helps the patient understand where is it going.
Right.
So that is kind of a measure for people. And having said this, you know, there are some difficulties which are very, very complex that may take a year also. And which is okay. Some treatments go that far also.
Right.
So when people come to our clinic, we tell them how much time is it going to take. And also, like you said, how do we measure? So we have some scales. We have some rating scales also, which we give to the patient before they start therapy, so that we have that base number. And then after every session, we give them the same kind of scale to fill up, so that they also see what is the progress. We also get to know what is the progress.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a set of rating scales which we give to the patient.
Right.
So that kind of measure we have.
So, you know, before we just wrap up this entire conversation, I just want to ask you that sometimes we forget that our therapists are also humans. You know, that it's not a machine you're talking to. It's a person with feelings and emotions. And, you know, like sometimes the work that we do can take a toll on us as well. So, you know, how do therapists look after themselves?
This is very simple. We go to our therapist to seek help and to feel better. You know, like we tell other people to go to therapists, we also go to our therapist to help ourselves.
Just to wrap up this entire conversation that we've had, and I know you've shared a lot of insights with our audience, and I'm sure they're going to really benefit, you know, from understanding therapy, how therapy works, and, you know, all the nuances that go into therapy, and sort of from a therapist's perspective as well. But if you could give some advice to someone who's, you know, either watching or listening to this right now and who might be having a hard time with their mental health, what would that be?
I would just say one sentence. I would say seeking help is a sign of strength. Please go help yourself.
Thank you so, so much, Dr. Singh, for all your time and for that beautiful piece of advice. I think, you know, you've really helped, you know, destigmatize therapy and help people rethink and re-explore the way we think about therapy, the way we understand therapy. And I really hope that this encourages anybody out there who's listening or watching, like if you need help with your mental health, I hope you know that there's always help available and it gets better. So even if it doesn't get better in the first attempt, just know that there is hope and it's not always going to be as hard as it is right now. Until next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.